This is Heather Johnson, and you're listening to the Ayurveda Life School podcast, episode number 152, Love Yourself Naked with Dr. Stacey Berman. This podcast is for people who want to take their health physically, emotionally, and spiritually to a whole new level using Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing tradition from India. This is the Ayurveda Life School podcast, and I'm your host, Heather Johnson. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the podcast today. We are in a store for a great treat today. It's been really an interesting journey as I've started this podcast and over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, because I get to meet the most interesting and diverse people. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And you're going to be blessed today by the conversation that we're about to have. So I want to introduce you to our guest today. We're going to be speaking with Stacey Berman, coming to us from New York City. And for a small town country girl, Heather in Wyoming, that is far away. And I'm just really pleased that we're able to make this connection and that we have the technology to be able to do so. It's a blessing for sure. Yeah. But Stacey's background, I'm going to give you a little short introduction to her, and then you'll learn a lot more as we're chatting. But she's truly a pioneer in the space of not only fitness in the beginning, but also the evolution of her journey into wellness on a holistic level. And so through this, I mean, we'll talk a lot about her beginning roots of boot camps in New York in 1999, back in the day, but also really the way that she shifted into natural medicine, becoming a PhD, so a doctor of natural medicine. And I'm really intrigued by the title of this new book that you're working on, which I'm going to let you share because I think it's fantastic. It's super, super fun. But we're going to talk today a lot about how our journey towards wellness really becomes an evolutionary journey and how we can discover ourselves on a deeper level as we work through our thoughts, our emotions, the neurology behind all of it. So Stacey, welcome to the show. I'm so happy to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me, Heather. I'm so psyched. That was a wonderful introduction, and I love your podcast voice.
Oh, well, thank you. Don't we all, before we started recording, I was mentioning to Stacey, we have our podcast voice and our meditation voice and our yoga voice and our mad mom voice. You know, we all have our voices. So tell me first, I really want to know, what is the title of the book that you are bringing out? Because I think for one, it made me giggle. So I want everyone to hear it, and then we'll get more into your background.
Oh, I don't even remember the name of it, but the working name, I think when I put that up was becoming, taking off the armor. Is that right? Is that what it said?
No, the one that I got from your publisher was Love Yourself Naked.
Oh, that one too. That's another book.
Exactly. Okay. But there was more behind that, friends. We're not just talking about running around without clothing. It was Love Yourself Naked, the Science of Self-Perception, Spirituality, and Weight Loss. Yes. So that was the one I was referring to, but sounds like there's some others in the works as well.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'll tell you a bit about that one. So that one came out of my experience working in the fitness industry with literally thousands of New Yorkers and some guests who would drop in from across the world when they were in New York City. And what I noticed was, and because I ran boot camp and I worked with people in groups and one-on-one for 15 years, right? In fitness. And so what I noticed was that no matter what if they were doing everything right, quote unquote, like exercising enough, eating well, sleeping, drinking water, you know, all of those things, even if they were doing all of those things, quote unquote, right, that if they had this negative self-perception, it prevented them from getting to where they wanted to be physically. So the book is a deep dive into the science of what a negative self-perception does to your metabolism, does to your hormone level, does to your digestion, so on and so forth. And what I found is that a negative self-perception does indeed affect metabolism, and it ultimately affects your ability to lose weight.
Oh my goodness, that right there is profound. Drop the mic. I mean, because, right? Because I think that especially women in the Western culture, we tend to have this perception of I can hate myself into beauty by, you know, self-flagellation and feeling like, oh, if I am unhappy enough about where I'm at, that I can somehow shift it. But what you just said is the exact opposite of that.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Because I mean, it's just like, I'll give you the general rundown of the science behind it, right? So if we're perceiving ourselves negatively, what emotions do those bring up? Probably shame, probably stress, maybe some fear because you feel maybe like you're unlovable or something like that. But those are all somewhat negative emotions, right? Mm-hmm. So what that's doing is it's kicking on the stress response. Now, when our body is under stress, and if you think about it, chronic stress, right? Because there's a statistic that I read recently that said women will body monitor themselves every 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds, a woman is adjusting what's going on, pulling in the stomach. Am I, seeing if somebody's looking at me? Most of those times, that's going to be a negative jolt of stress to the system because we're perceiving ourselves in a negative way, right? Mm-hmm. Now, what happens when the body is under chronic stress, until it gets to shutdown mode, but that's a whole nother thing, which we can go into, but I won't go into here. The blood will rush to the extremities, the arms and legs. Stress response is the fight or flee response, which means there's not enough blood and nutrients rushing to the internal organs of digestion and metabolism and all that stuff. Mm. So when we perceive ourselves negatively, we're jolting ourselves consistently with stress response, with the sympathetic nervous system. And it's literally preventing our body from digesting what we're eating, absorbing the nutrients, so on and so forth. So it really does affect the way our body is processing food.
That is so interesting. From an Ayurvedic standpoint, we teach a lot about mindfulness when eating and the ability to be present and calm and to really get out of that fight or flight, because the more we're in that, we know from, ancient science that affects digestion. So that's so interesting to think that even that thought pattern about our physical body and what we think about ourselves and how we're that adjustment. When you said that, I even pictured my young teenage daughter who is constantly, she doesn't listen to this, so I can talk about her, constantly looking at herself, right? If there is an oven, I'm in the kitchen right now. And so I'm seeing my kitchen. If there's an oven reflection, if there's a window, if there's anything, she's always, and she's primping, right? She's like shifting and standing taller and pushing her chest out and sticking her belly in and all of those things. And this is at such a young age. And I just think about a lifetime of doing that, how that's affecting us. That's really interesting. I had not hadn't thought about it from that point of view, as far as how that's even affecting digestion when we're doing that.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's the same, it's a similar thing. If you're eating something and you believe this food is bad for you, well, then when you eat it, how is your body responding to that at a biochemical level, right? Versus if you're like, all right, it may be a cookie, but it's fine. I'll be fine. Like there's different biochemicals that the body is going to release in response to what we're thinking and what we're feeling.
I have an Ayurvedic teacher and he would tell me that he would rather see us eating a big juicy hamburger with joy and presence and gratitude than a kale and quinoa salad with suffering and misery and unhappiness. So I think that's exactly what he was talking about and how our body can process and handle it better. So this is an evolution though, for you to get to the point where you're at, because when you started your journey in fitness and health and wellness, the focus wasn't where you're at now with it. So I have to quote this because I just think it's cool that Forbes magazine calls you a New York City fitness icon. I bet you just love that title passing around. Totally. I think it's awesome, right?
So cool. I totally do. Can I just say that I have tried to get most of my friends and family to call me Icon Berman and they refuse.
Well, I think we should go with it. On this show, you are officially Icon Berman. So let it be written. But so back in 99, you're in New York City. Why? What inspired you to start doing boot camps? Because now boot camps are pretty prevalent, especially, you know, 10 years or so after you started those. So was it something you just came up with? Where did this even come from?
Yeah. So I grew up doing Taekwondo with my father. I mean, before I could even walk, he would go to the dojang. I would like be on the floor, which now that I think of it, was probably filthy and shouldn't let a toddler roll around on the floor, but we didn't know better in the 70s. So it's fine.
Okay. It's created a very strong immune system. You developed all of the antibodies. You're fine. You're good.
Right. So I just always remember being fascinated by the body and how it moved and just like the possibility that it offered. And so when I was growing up, when I graduated college, I was like, what do I want to do? I don't know what I want to do. Or when I went into college and my boyfriend at the time was like, well, why don't you become a trainer? You love working out and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, I can do that. Is that a thing?
That's a career.
Right. And so I started looking into it. I was in school for psychology and health education. So all, like in retrospect, it seems obvious. Those would be two really important factors. And so anyway, I started getting certifications. I went to one of the popular gyms in New York City or on the East Coast. I got a job there as a floor trainer. Then they have three levels, floor trainer, pro trainer, and then master trainer. And so I quickly reached master trainer status. But one of the things that bothered me so much was that what I saw was that people would come, you know, January and then a bikini season, and they come for like a few weeks to like 2 months and then they stop coming, or they came all the time, but there was no real change to their body and there was no real change to their routine. They were just like treadmill, and nothing was really changing, right? And so I watched this process happen and I recall, you know, Taekwondo and how all the possibilities of the body, well, in that practice anyway. And I was like, you know what? I think there's a way better way to do this. So I started boot camp. It was me and one of my clients. And we just went out to Central Park at 5:30 in the morning. And literally we used the park as the gym and our body as the weight. And then a few more clients wanted to do it. And then before long, I had like, you know, 10 people in a 5:30 a.m. class. Now, also, I just want to say mind blowing. 5:30 a.m. Why would anyone want to do that? I don't know how I did it for 15 years. But
well, I'm a big believer in the morning because circadian rhythms, Ayurveda. So you say 5:30, I'm like, that is the perfect time to be doing a boot camp. Good for you.
So 5:30 in the morning, quickly built up to 10 people, mostly my clients or people that they knew. And then I had a lot of people who were like, I really want to do the boot camp, but 5:30 a.m. So then I was like, okay, 7 a.m. And then they were like, great, I really want to do it, but I can't do the morning. Can you do an evening class? So that's how it just kind of grew very organically. And then I was written up a few times in different media outlets. And then all of a sudden, I remember this, I got covered on a news show and I went to Bali. And then when I got back, or when I was in Bali, I checked my email and the news thing came out and attendance went up like fourfold for the next session. So I was like, so, I mean, it was really exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
you know, it was just me in the park doing this. So that was how it started. It was just like the idea of my history of seeing fitness and movement in a particular way, and then seeing it play out in a gym or as it did anyway, and then saying there's a better way to do this. And also I really like the idea of working out outdoors because it gives people a sense of being part of the cycles of nature rather than like in a box in this artificial light with like these artificial weights. And I'm not knocking weight training. I'm just saying that like this gave them a sense of, oh, I'm part of this. I get to experience it. And sometimes the experience, it gets cold in New York. I'm sure you're in Wyoming. It gets cold.
Oh, it's freezing. Yeah, we got 4 inches of snow here right now, middle of April. Oh, so yeah. Wow.
But there's something still when you get out there and you do it anyway, there's something that's beyond the fitness that's empowering. It's not just the push-ups. It's not just the running. It's the, holy shit, I'm out here. It's like 10 degrees out and I'm still doing this. And that's something that I think, whether or not, like I never really spoke about the like maybe spiritual aspect of it. But I think that's one of the things that people got out of it was that it gave them a sense of connection, not just to the people in the group, but the connection to the natural world and also connection to their own strength.
Well, and being in the city, I think we miss some of that too.
Right.
That connection. So I'm sure that drew them to it because it was such a different experience than what they would get anywhere else.
Right,
and was your journey into nutritional health and natural medicine, was that parallel or did that come later? Was it something that kind of grew out of your experiences that you were having teaching?
Yeah. So the nutrition stuff grew out of the work with boot camp, because, you know, I started boot camp, I don't know, how old was I? 20s-ish and early 20s. And so, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20, you could basically do whatever you want.
You like, think.
Right. I'm just not going to eat for a day and like, then I'm all good, you know?
My jeans will fit again. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And then that stops working. And then you're like, oh, wait a second. But then also it was the, you know, we've all heard this, right? You can't out-train your diet, right? So no matter what, even if you are, you know, working out enough, and even if you are at, you know, physically where you want to be, look and feel that, like, if you're not eating well, that's going to have an impact on your performance, on the way that you think and feel and all of that stuff. So it was born out of the boot camp and witnessing in myself, as well as people that came to class, that nutrition was actually maybe even more impactful than the, like, you know, push-ups that we were doing, that we needed these both to be working at the same time. And then from there, that was what led me to natural medicine, and was that I realized that the way we think and feel also has an impact on our physical body. And back to my, you know, point earlier, that even if you're doing everything right in the material realm, meaning exercise and sleep and eating right, that if your mind, if the way you're thinking and feeling is not in line with those things, then you're not going to see the results that you want to see. And whether those results are in your physical body or in your relationships or in your work or whatever, but they're all connected, and you cannot divorce them. Mm-hmm. So that's what led me to natural medicine. I wanted to understand, well, like, I know this intuitively to be true, and I know this to be true, and as I watch people and work with people and also myself, but what is going on? I wanted to, like,
exactly the science.
Yeah, exactly. So they all kind of came out of what started out as fitness. But now as I look back, it's really all about healing. Right. Mm-hmm. So at that time I wouldn't have said I work with people on healing, but really it's just a version of it. And now when I work with people, I think anyway, it's a more complete version of it.
It sounds a lot like when many people come to yoga practice and they find yoga. That's how I found yoga. And I was probably about the same age as when you were starting those boot camps, when I found yoga, and it was for the physical aspects because I was training so hard and doing triathlons and marathons, and it was beating me up and I needed something to stretch and restore. And I thought yoga was the answer, even though I always would sneak out during Shavasana because I thought that was a waste of time. I could go run another mile and a half while you all were laying here on the floor. And so I took me time though to see the connection that my body had to everything else, and that yoga was kind of a pathway to do that. But I think the way we care for our bodies has a great reflection on the way we're caring for our soul, because we're not, if there's a neglect of that external shell, there's also usually a neglect of the internal. And mm-hmm. so that whole idea of, well, I have to, you know, be restrictive and it's all about the spirit. There has to be that physical component to it. And from an Ayurveda standpoint, food is really the most influential in how we transform the body. But when you were talking about, you know, the thoughts and things, it made me think of meditation. Is that something that within your study of natural medicine and when you were going through that practice, is that something that's studied and talked about within that space? And because you're thinking about thoughts, meditation seems like a huge way to access that part of ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different ways of accessing that part. Meditation is one. Breathing practice is another. Plant medicine is another. And I work with people on this when it seems to be coming up for them, but sexuality is also a way that we can work with that. And I'll give you an example of this. I think most people don't consider sexuality or sexual expression. And I'm not saying, like, you know, going out and, I'm just saying your own sexual energy.
Yes, exactly.
That most people maybe not all, but a lot of people are taught that this is something to not look at, to maybe be ashamed of, to kind of push off to the side, or something separate. Mm-hmm. While yes, there is an appropriate time and place for it, but it's your life force as well.
Yeah.
And so if you're rejecting it, or you're repressing it, or you're ashamed of it, that's having an effect on your physical body also, right? The etymology of the word healing is wholeness. And if you're rejecting any part of you, then you're not ever going to be healed. I mean, we're always in mm-hmm. process, right? But mm-hmm. but the whole point is we're trying to get to wholeness. So sexuality is another way. One of the ways that I really love working with people is, have you ever heard of character armor or character structure?
No, these are new to me. Oh, I'm excited. Teach us something new, because I bet the listeners, okay. It's new to them too.
Okay. So character structure or character armor is basically a body psychology. So when someone has an experience that is intense or chronic enough during developmental times in our lives, specifically mm-hmm. in utero till about 7 or 8 years old, when those experiences are unresolved, they don't just disappear into the ether, they get locked into the body. They get wired into the nervous system, locked into the mm-hmm. tissue, posture, and eventually affect the musculature of the body. And so by looking at a person's posture, you can understand what their primary psychological and emotional obstacles have been in their life.
Wow, now, that's so cool. That's like way better than palm reading. Okay, sorry, keep going.
And this is, I mean, this is so amazing, because everyone is like, you know, when I do it on them, they're like, what am I? And I'm like, you're a blah, 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 blah. And then they're like, how did you know that? Like, I'm reading what your body is telling me. So it's a great trick to do at a party, but then also, you know, people are like, whoa. Why I bring that up is because the benefit of working through the body and working through this character armor is that you don't need to tell me your narrative. I can see it written in your body. Mm-hmm. And the narrative that we make up is often in some way our defenses, our coping strategies that protect us, that keep us protected, right? So most likely they're not going to want us to change because they think they're keeping us protected, right? And so what we can do though, seeing it written in the body, we could start working with the body to access those repressed, stored, unresolved emotions and thinking patterns, and help the body become less rigid in those patterns. So by getting mm-hmm. the body to move in new ways based off of their character armor, we can help them release those stored emotions, those stored sensations that are locked in there that create the emotions, right? Like, I feel tightness in my belly. I relate that to anger. Now I create a narrative about me being angry, but really it's probably the sensation is present and I'm just making up the narrative of it. Does that make sense?
Interesting. It's the way we're interpreting the things that our body's actually experiencing. So we're defining it. We're kind of labeling it.
Exactly. So when we can kind of do a bottom-up approach where we're changing the way our bodies are sensing things, the way our bodies are holding on to tightness, then eventually that starts changing the way we think and feel. Instead of, for example, in talk therapy is always, well, let me tell you the story. Now let's examine this. And that's a wonderful tool. But even and often when you know what the story is and you know what the trigger is, that doesn't change the trigger. You still get triggered by it. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, I acknowledge, I know why it happens, but I still get triggered by it. This is a way to get to the trigger, to change the trigger so that the narrative starts changing.
It's like getting to the root cause instead of just always looking at and discussing symptoms over and over. Exactly. I know people like that in life and in my practice that can't seem to move past things. So is it a practice that they do, that they're taught how to do, or is it a practice that you're guided through with like a doctor of natural medicine? Like, how is that something that somebody accesses?
Yeah. So It depends. Obviously, usually it's working with me initially to get them to understand what their bodies are doing. And then when I work with people, I like to work with them in little, like 2 to 3 month clips, because I think if you're still needing me after 3 months, I'm not doing my job.
Yes, I understand.
So it's like, so let's work together. And then by the time you're finished, you're going to have all the tools you need to like get through that thing. And then of course, you know, maybe in a year or two, we work it together again. But initially it would be working together to start understanding what those signals are, what your body is saying. So it's like, I give them the book, they read the book, we do the exercises, and then they take the book and they leave.
And their body is the book in a sense, right?
Exactly. Because
that's what we're reading. So when we're looking at, so we're, from a natural standpoint and, you know, more in tune with yourself standpoint, we're trying to be aware of what the sensations in our body are and what those might mean. So does there come a time where we want to let go of what, of defining what those mean and just letting it be there? You know, I'm feeling fluttery in my stomach, or I'm feeling a little bit light, or I'm feeling, you know, like I'm having a hard time paying attention. So instead of labeling it as I'm distracted, I'm having anxiety, I'm feeling ungrounded. That's what we're doing through that work, is to help to separate that thought that we're then creating about the sensation we're experiencing.
Yes, correct. I think there's a few things. So initially, with people who have hard time connecting with their emotion or expressing their emotion, it's beneficial to get them to, okay, I feel anger, and anger shows up in my body, in my stomach, and it feels like a knot or whatever it is. So there's a benefit to that. But then yes, eventually we want to get away from the narrative. Like you can say I'm angry. The anger itself could be valid. The narrative is usually just the story we're making up about it. So we want to get away from the narrative. We want to get away from our perception of the narrative. And we just want to be with the emotion or sensation. And what we'll find is that when you just focus on the sensation or the emotion, it usually starts changing. It's when we get lost in the narrative, and then it's like, oh, I'm angry. This person made me angry. Now it's building up, and now it's building up. But when we're just like, that doesn't even matter. Let me just be here with this. More often than not, it starts changing in some way. So that goes back to that mindfulness.
Yeah.
And the presence. Yeah.
What a neat tool we were given with a body to be able to work through some of those things. I would suggest that it's karmic things that we're working through that are from past experiences, past life, where we're now working through those. And we have this body that we get to use as a tool to identify if we can pay attention and not just kind of override it and do things differently. Right. Does nutrition play a huge role in what you're doing when you're working with people then through this natural mentioned plant medicine? To me, that sounds like nutrition, but maybe that's a different thing.
It is a different thing, but yes, nutrition does play a big role in it. Not just for the, you know, fitness aspects, but for the emotional and psychological aspects. There's been, you know, it's been shown that if you have lack of certain minerals, it could cause depression or anxiety, you know, so it's not just fitness related, but so yes, nutrition does play a role. So I definitely look at what they're eating, when they're eating, all of that. But plant medicine is specifically psychedelics.
Okay. Like psilocybin, things like
exactly.
that. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had some clients and actually some family members reach out to me about that. And they're like, what do you know about this? And I said, well, I haven't experienced it, so I can't really speak to it because I don't know it. Right. But that might need to be another episode. We might have to have you come back on and we'll talk about that.
I would love that.
It's growing, this whole plant medicine journey and things that people are experiencing in that respect. So when you shifted and you went to get your PhD, how were you? I know we talked just a little bit about, you know, reconciling the idea that it's not just fitness. It's so much more that's going on. There's like the neurology side, there's the mental side. There's kind of a lot more aspects to our wellness all around. Do you still teach boot camps? Did that shift how you work with your people? It sounds like you work with clients a little bit more on a direct one-on-one basis, but how has that changed kind of your life experience now that you're in a different kind of an evolved state of where you're teaching?
Right. I don't teach boot camp anymore. I love it. It was my baby, but I'm so happy to not be teaching it anymore.
It's exhausting. Teaching group classes are really exhausting. Yeah,
it really is. So I don't teach that anymore. When I teach now, I do like small group classes and mostly one-on-ones. Mm-hmm. And that is, so when I work with people, usually a lot of people come to me when they're having some sort of manifested something in their life. So whether it's manifested chronic disease or chronic pain, or maybe it's a repeated failed relationships, or mm-hmm. just feeling stuck, or just feeling like something's not right, but I can't figure it out. Like mm-hmm. that's usually where I get my people. So it's some sort of manifested something that they're seeing, but they just don't know what's the problem and how to fix it. And so when I look at someone, I start at a macro level. So I look mm-hmm. at physical body, which includes movement, which includes food, which includes sleep, which includes breathing, that sort of thing.
Yep.
So that's physical body. Then we look at some of their mental and emotional patterns. And mm-hmm. this is all, and it's like, when I say this, right, mental and emotional patterns are going to be reflected in their body. So we 100%. Talk about it, but also I'm looking at what's going on in their body and how their body moves and all that stuff. Then I'm looking at their connection to spirit. I might say the word purpose, depending on the audience, but a sense of something larger than themselves. Mm-hmm. Then we're looking at their environment. I'm in New York City. This is pretty much a trash environment.
Yeah.
So, but that's going to have a real effect on our physical health, on our emotional mm-hmm. health, on our psychological health. And then I look at community. Do they feel like they have a sense of community? How many close friends do they have? Do they feel like they can call somebody up if they're, you know, not feeling well or in a jam or just to, you know, shoot the shit? Like, do they have mm-hmm. that network of people? Because all of those things have a real and measurable effect on their physical body and on every other aspect.
Yes.
So we look at it first from that macro level, like, where are they? Are they balanced here and not here? Are they here? You know, and we look mm-hmm. there. And then as we go through it and we kind of know what is working, what isn't working, then we start adjusting them and making small changes to those different categories. So then we start working at a bit more of a micro level.
When people are starting out a journey of wellness, I think they sometimes are feeling overwhelmed. I mean, because that was a lot of areas that you just talked about that we look at for wellness. And I think we start with our bodies a lot of times because it feels easier. It's something mm-hmm. we can see, we can manage it. How do people work with their thoughts? That's one thing that I wanted to talk about because you mentioned it. And I know from experience personally and with clients, that's an area that's really challenging because they'll do the things right that we mentioned before, right? They're doing all of the actions, but the emotion or the mental side behind it is really difficult to shift sometimes. And we look at it Ayurvedically as, you know, we have layers, we have our Anamaya Kosha, which is like our physical body. And then we go deeper and deeper into the mind and the subtle body and kind of our causal or karmic self.
Right.
And when we have these karmic tendencies or things that are just so difficult for us to, you know, you might call them grooves or patterns or habits that are so hard to overcome.
Right.
If someone listening to this is like, I'm in a stuck place. I don't know if I can go see Miss Stacy because she's in New York and I'm in Australia because I have people all over the world that listen. Where's a good place to start from what you understand and how you work with people?
Yeah. When I work with people to start understanding their mental and emotional patterning, usually what I do is I go through this process, what's called compassionate inquiry. Do you know who Dr. Gabor Mate is?
I don't. Another brilliant person I'll have to look into now. I can't have the list.
Okay. So Dr. Gabor Mate, he's brilliant. He was an MD. He's an author. He's a speaker. Anyway, I just finished a year ago a professional training program with him. And his process, I think, is one of the best because it gets the person from whatever the thing is that's bothering them today through understanding how that emotion or thought pattern is connected to whatever is unresolved in their life from childhood. So basically, it would be a process of asking what the intention is for the day. So in this instance, if you're like, okay, I have a problem with self-perception, let's say I feel bad about my body. I feel ashamed of my body. Okay. What happened that, like, what's the latest instance that happened that mm-hmm. you made you feel ashamed of your body? Well, I went to put on a pair of jeans and I couldn't close the button. And I realized I probably gained some weight and that just made me ashamed. Okay. So now we sit with the feeling of shame. Where is it in the body? We let the person feel that shame as much as they can. Obviously, they could also tell us, like, I don't want to do this right now. We've never forced somebody into it. But you sit with that feeling for a moment. And then you can ask yourself, when was the first time you felt that? And inevitably, well, the first time I felt that was when I was in, 4 years old, 10 years old, and little Jimmy, like, poked me and made a cow sound at me. And so now we recognize that shame that we feel today is based off of a 10-year-old's experience in elementary school, right? And then what we can do is, well, we would ask, well, what does that 10-year-old want or need in that time, at that moment? So I'll ask you, a 10-year-old girl who just got made fun of and mooed at, what are some of the feelings you think she might be feeling?
Oh, well, she's going to feel embarrassed.
Embarrassed.
She might, there might be some anger under there that she's not necessarily expressing. So right. Definitely some shame, some probably a desire to hide that, maybe an embarrassment to even tell anyone about it. But overriding, I think it would be a need for love.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So all of those things you said, maybe some anger, embarrassment, wanting to hide, right? So now we could look at these and see, are these patterned throughout your life, this wanting to hide? And not just physically, but do you tend to want to hide at work? Do you want to tend to hide in relationships? So you start seeing, oh, this is where that comes from. And then you try to provide that part of you, that love, right? A 10-year-old just wants to feel loved. Mm-hmm. So how do you give yourself that love in that moment? Because when you're feeling shame, really, that's just that little girl wanting to be loved in that moment. Does that make sense?
So true. That totally makes sense. That's really an interesting way to look at it, because I think we look at things now and we say, well, this doesn't make sense. I shouldn't be feeling this way. And then we just fall further into that spiral of negativity, which does not pull us out. We just get stuck in there. That's really interesting. Okay. I think that was a good, helpful way to explain that.
Yeah. And this it's a really, really useful. And so if I could simplify it for people, because it's sometimes hard to do with yourself because you're inside of yourself. But if you have an emotion that comes up or a thought pattern that comes up, pause for a sec, feel whatever it is, and then ask, when was the first time I ever felt this? Mm. And inevitably, I mean, usually you could go pretty far back. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the part that needs healing. It's not that I can't fit into my jeans. Like, yeah, okay, fine. Maybe you want to fit into your jeans. I get it. But that's the part right now that you should be trying to heal and provide whatever it needs in that moment.
Because that moment when that happened, it created a pattern that you've then reinforced every time you have that feeling. And it's these, like we call them samskaras, but it's kind of this conditioned way of being that you just automatically have that response. You stand on the scale, it weighs more than you want it to, which is a made up thing anyways, like who cares what it says, but we see that and suddenly we have this trigger that immediately does that. I love it. That's so helpful. So helpful. So it's been so fun to visit with you. Is there anything else that you would love to share? I feel like we could talk about a lot of things, and we definitely will have you back on and talk about the plant medicine, because I think that's really interesting to people right now. But
I would love to come on and talk about plant medicine. I do have something that I'm working on in terms of the character armor stuff. So maybe when that's more fleshed out, I'd love to share that with you too.
Perfect. And for people to reach out to you, they would go to stacyberman.com, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to spell that for you all. And it's going to be in the show notes, but it's StacyBerman.com. You are in New York City, right?
I am. But I do work with people around the world. So It's not limited to just New Yorkers.
Beautiful. So we can do a little online call. I love technology for that. It's so, so helpful. Well, it's so good to visit with you and learn a little bit more about what you do and the work that you're doing in the world. It's definitely changing people's lives. I think this was an amazing conversation. So I appreciate so much your time, Stacy.
Thank you so much, Heather. It's wonderful to be here and share with you.
Thank you. Before you go, was this episode helpful for you? Well, the most helpful thing you can do in return is to leave a review in iTunes. The reviews are what keep the podcast going. And be sure to subscribe and share this episode if you loved it. You can connect with me online at AyurvedaLifeSchool.com, on Instagram, and on Facebook at Ayurveda Life School. Have a beautiful day. Namaste.